black are gold pants, 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 black podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the inaugural edition of Black Heart Gold Podcast. I am Hawkeye State. Joining me is the imitable Oops Pow Surprise.
Oops. Good morning.
How you doing? Joining us tonight is none other than Mark Morehouse, the Cedar Rapids Gazette and the fantastic On Iowa blog. Mark, how you doing tonight?
Great.
Welcome.
Thanks for the kind words.
Well, someone has to
wait till we talk about Greenwood.
Well, we'll get there in a second, but someone has to do actual reporting, so yeah. We appreciate the fact that you do that, so that we can continue to make fun of Tim Brewster and do other, you know, other various things that have nothing to do with actual Iowa football.
Brewster, he's endless material, though.
He is. He's a veritable font, a cornucopia, really, of humor. So, Mark, you were at Media Day the other day.
Yeah.
I've been reading the reports. Before we get to Greenwood, which has to be the topic that could cause the most discussion tonight. What's your take on DJK?
I think it's just pure coach motivation, and I think it's sort of a. Maybe there's more there. Maybe I'm just not seeing the fine print here. I really think it's just coach motivation. I know he's been late for some meetings. He's got a little bit of a track record for that. I don't know what his effort is. He's one of those guys who really takes care of his body. He seems to. Be in fantastic shape. He's not on the blotter. He gets good grades. He's been a leading receiver last year, so this is just something, maybe a wake-up call. We'll see. I mean, hey, against Northern Iowa, if he has no catches and doesn't see the field for the second quarter, then it's real.
Yeah, that's kind of how I've thought about it, too, until I saw Stansy talking about McNutt and saying that he caught everything in sight. And now I'm not quite so sure. You don't usually see Ricky talking about his receivers that much, but I agreed initially, and now I'm not quite so certain that McNutt really isn't that good.
I guess a little follow-up to that is, doesn't it seem a little obvious that from a pure talent standpoint, that the two top receivers are actually DJK and McNutt? Like, are their roles, you know, between the flanker and the split end, are they so different in the O'Keefe offense that those two have to be fighting with one another for a starting spot rather than just lining up on opposite ends?
Yeah, I don't think so, because, you know, you would think that the flanker would be traditionally more of sort of a shorter guy, a guy who does better in traffic. But that guy right now is listed as Strauss, who's a big media day, was one guy who popped out at me just the way he looked in his jersey, big, strong kid. No, I don't think there's much difference there. But going back to HS, yes, I have seen, I've heard this from a couple of people now, that McNutt is human Velcro. He catches everything that comes his way. I heard that from Keenan Davis. I've heard that from a couple of defenders. So maybe there's something there. It's such a huge leap that he would go ahead of the guy who's been, you know, the leading receiver last few years, but who knows. But one thing also, you guys remember DJ K against Wisconsin in 2007. He was a dynamic playmaker who did a ton and was like, yeah. At kick returns, he was Tim Dwight. You know?
Absolutely.
Sort of, somewhat. Yeah. Maybe they want to
get Iowa in a game, basically.
Yeah, he did. And maybe they want to get that guy back, because that guy was, you know, I think he had a 4-game stretch last year, and I've written about it a few times, where he only caught like a handful of balls for like 59 yards. He disappears a little bit, and maybe they want to just bring that guy out every game in a consistent effort.
Yeah, that could be. You brought up Keenan Davis. I saw from your post that your take is that you think he's probably not going to redshirt. Is that right?
No, I think he's going to play unless there's something there that's not totally developed yet that I don't see. I mean, the kid's 6'3", 205 pounds, so I think his body's there. You know, unless he's just not getting it in the play, and that could happen. And that's happened to guys before. If he's not getting it in the film study, if he's not getting it in the playbook, then maybe he won't. But I think he's in. I also think, just judging those photos from the other day, looks like Wenger's getting a pretty good look at punt returner, too, which is very interesting to me.
At punt returner,
so
wow.
So he would be doing double bidding on, like, kick and punt, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and we also talked about this on your blog, too, where I've written about it, that I think it's not beyond reason that Hampton would not be the kick return guy. I say this because Ferentz is disgusted with it. He's thrown up his hands, and last year there was a little ray of sunshine when when Hampton showed up. He averaged like 23.3 yards, broke a few, and I think that finished sixth in the Big Ten. You know, this game to be Tampa Bay Buccaneer-esque here with the kick return. I mean, the last one was C.J. Jones. I counted last year, and I've lost count now how many kickoffs it's been, but we're talking like 7 years now. I mean, Tampa Bay's kind of pointing laughing at this point. So it's not, I think Ferentz is disgusted, and he wants improvement there, and I think he's willing to throw Hampton. And Hampton wants to do the job.
It's funny you brought up C.J. Jones. I got spammed today. Actually, not me, but the fake Kirk Ferentz Twitter feed got spammed today by a USC fan who said that they beat Iowa State in the Orange Bowl in 2001. So they don't even remember what team they played. That's how long ago it's been since we've returned a kick for a touchdown.
Yeah, let you know, but the Hulk Hogan, he's forgotten.
But in other words, Mania is still rolling strong, brother.
Funny, that was a brilliant post. I don't even know a lot about wrestling, but the Iowa State one really got me. Just looking at the guy, that's like Kenny Powers, bad fat Kenny Powers, living outside, living in under a bridge somewhere. Whoever that wrestler was.
that was Repo Man, and I got to tell you, my memory's a little hazy from you know the 10 or 15 years ago that he wrestled. Mm-hmm. I don't remember him winning a single match.
He got paid though.
Well, technically, yeah, I guess Iowa State does too.
So let's get down to the topic at hand, I think, which is Brett Greenwood. And I'm going to give the floor over to Oops Pal because I'm more or less indifferent on the Greenwood question. But
Oops, all right, Mark, I'll just toss this out there. And obviously it's with no disrespect to Brett Greenwood as a person or anything like that. But I got to tell you, 2 years running now, it seems like he's been the weak link on the defense. And I wanted to know if that's going to continue to be the case, and what's his third year of play now?
Yeah, I think last year if he was a weak link last year, he was still pretty strong because it was a pretty great defense last year.
Right.
The first year against Penn State, he was lost. And that was his first game. He was lost, and I think he'd probably be the first one to admit that. His bad plays don't jump out at me. I did go back and look at the Penn State game because that's the only one I still have on DVR at this point. You know, because I got to have Mad Men on there for my wife. So I look back, and there might be a little bit of truth to what you were saying about angles, attack angles. Maybe there's a yard or two there that he's not that could be cut down with a little more violent tackle or just a better angle. But I still think that he's a smart player. He does a lot back there. He seems to be in position in the passing game. And last year, the guy taken out during the pass, four passing downs, the safety taken out was Tyler Sash. I mean, against Illinois, you guys probably remember. I think Deontay Morrow, his first and only and last and final appearance was during a passing down because Sash gave up a long touchdown. Also, at Michigan State, he gave up a long pass. So I think there, you know, you can make an argument either way. Sash obviously improved. I mean, he had five interceptions. He's playing his best football of the year in the Outback Bowl. I don't think, you know, what maybe what's guilty here is I think Greenwood's a fine player. I don't think he's all Big Ten. But, you know, is there competition there? And I wonder, you know, Jack Swanson's true freshman or a redshirt freshman jumping up there. He's number two all of a sudden. Morrow's gone. I wonder about the competition there. Maybe that's the flaw that we're both kind of pointing at.
Well, yeah, the competition sort of seems to jump out of you just because it's not there.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you saw Morrow transfer out, and then he lost a couple other safeties who went on to greener pastures as well over the past couple years, guys who were more highly rated and probably fought better themselves as players than they did at Greenwood. Now, we can certainly agree that he's not a dumb player. He doesn't make dumb mistakes. You know, you never see him get torched outside of Anthony Morelli a couple of years ago, but it does always seem that he is, whether it's a product of Norm Parker's scheming or just plain not enough time or not enough talent, it always seems like he's getting to the receiver – a half second after the ball does, and he doesn't really have the hidden skills to make up for that disparity. So it always seems like the way the teams move the ball on Iowa is throwing at him and at 15 yards a pop or so. You saw it when Wisconsin's having a plan to get throws off, but I'm not really confident in him right there unless he's making more physical strides. Have you seen anything like that?
Yeah, I would say the physical. He's no Bob Sanders. I think we've been spoiled a little bit. And Bob Sanders is now officially a long time ago. But Derek Pagel was a killer. Considine, he was a sure tackler, not a big hitter. I think we're a little bit spoiled. Pascal had his moments where he was pretty physical. He had a good, after long plays, he had some good hits. But I think, last year it was sort of picking out the dent on the underside of the portion because Iowa's defense was really good last year. This year, maybe it's more of an issue this year. Maybe they'll need more help. The rush defense is not going to be what it was last year. If it is, then that's huge kudos.
Well, if what it was last year, then we might as well be picking out tickets to Tempe or something.
Yeah, huge kudos to Carl Klug, the international man of mystery, and Mike Daniels, who's about an inch taller than I am, but can bench press 900,000 more times than I can. Anyway, I think if the rush defense, if there's a step down this year in the defense that's poised to step down, it's the rush defense. And a killer free safety would help that.
Okay, Stavis mentioned the disparity before, and I don't remember really where it came from, but it sort of seems like Sash and then even before him, Pagel, and to a lesser extent, but still more than Greenwood, Considine, those guys hit. Well, Greenwood just nearly makes tackles, and even that's only about 90% of the time. And it seems like if you really want to set the tone as far as rush defense goes, you want one of those other guys before you want Greenwood.
Yeah, and you know what? Last year, and that's one thing about Phil Parker secondaries, they're very physical. And maybe we're noticing that with the Fred. Maybe there's a step back there. But you look at Spave. I mean, he was either third or fourth on the team in tackles, which is fantastic. And Fletcher, I believe, was up there. Or he had an incredible amount the year before, like 43, and he only started like four or five games. Yeah, I think they're very physical, and that's one thing they're coached to do. And it'll be interesting. Greenwood's coming off shoulder surgery. I assume he's fine by now. That had set him back a little bit in training because he didn't play. He didn't participate in spring drills. But I don't know. I mean, maybe Mountain Molehill. I don't know. I think the competition thing. That's what I keep coming back to there. I mean, it's kind of like Jake. Jake in 2007, he was guilty of being the best quarterback Iowa had, which, as it turned out, it wasn't saying much of that in 2007. This year, last year, he had some real competition with Stan. I wonder how Stansy would have been if he hadn't hurt his shoulder a little bit in spring. Or early in summer.
You think he would have started from day one if he'd been healthy?
I think so. I think the coaches have pretty much. I think O'Keefe had made up his mind. I'm not sure Kirk had because I think the Pittsburgh game was the final straw. I really think that Kirk wanted Christensen to elevate in that game and he just didn't.
That game was Stansy's final straw until it turned into Christensen's final straw because you remember that they were like. They had had enough of his rogue play calling or whatsoever, at the end of the first half, and they were like, we're going with Christensen, and he didn't really get it done.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting. I wonder what would have happened if Stansy had been behind center in 2007, when he takes a snap, and then 2 seconds later the center comes flying at him.
Yeah, the offensive line was light years behind what showed up last year. A lot of that was Brodeman, and a lot of that was Kyle Callaway feeling comfortable out there. And then Bulaga moved out to tackle, I think, was a big deal, too. And, I wonder how Stansy would have done it. He admitted, and Ferentz has said, that he was not ready to play in 2007, so it was Jake and Jake alone. How many sacks did he have? Was he sacked like 40-something times that year? Indiana came in, and the little people wrestler that Indiana is came in.
Hey,
they got nine
don't
hats, right?
Half an Iowa, That was probably low. And yeah, I think they were both good. And I think Sandy, he's as you guys say, the man thing this year, and he grew into it. And maybe they'll find one of those guys in the backfield. Maybe there's going to be a dime guy, and maybe the guy is Jordan Bernstein. Now that we're kind of spitballing here, I don't know if he's. I don't think he'll win. And this is me being politically correct. I don't think he'll win the cornerback job that's open there, the left cornerback. That guy's going to get a lot of traffic. And yeah, I think it's going to be Prater or Lowe. And I think maybe Bernstein starts to kind of look at safety. That's totally football.
That's
crazy talk.
That's where Bernstein played in high school, so it makes sense if that was the move. They got to find him someplace to play. All right. Yeah. Mark, you brought up Daniels and Klug inside. Oops Pal and I were talking last night about what could possibly be the rotation at defensive line. Mm-hmm. With the accolades they keep throwing on Broderick Binns, do you think that there's a better possibility now than there was back in spring and early summer that either Claiborne or Ballard moves inside, at least on passing situations, if not full time, and gives Binns a spot?
Yeah, I that's a great question. I asked Rick Kaczynski that straight up, and he said there are absolutely no plans for that right now. There's not been any discussion on that.
Really?
I haven't put that interview up yet, but I kind of find that hard to believe because those two guys are 280 pounds, Ballard and Claiborne.
Legit 280, yeah.
Yes, and their tackles, and they were 280 last year, they're 280 again this year. This year the tackles are, Klug told me he's 260. I think Daniel said he was 270. So they're smaller in there. Cody Hundermark, I don't think he's going to be the cavalry here because he had a shoulder injury. They kept him out last year and spring ball. So I wonder how much work he was able to do as far as upper body strength type things. Yeah, he's out there. He's healthy now. But, it's been a whole year out of the game. So he could be a factor. Who knows? But I really think you're talking about the emergence of Binns. And I think it's there. I think the kid, I stood next to him and asked him about his wingspan. And he said it's always been that way. He's always had really long arms. And he really, last year, he showed it. And he didn't get a lot of playing time. If you look at I'm not that geeky. I don't keep that stat. But as far as stats go, at least, judging, just giving it a quick eye, he got maybe, what, would you guys say, 20% of the snaps out there?
He was getting all the snaps over when Claiborne was hurt. It was Geary stepping in there, not Bivens, right?
Yeah, Geary, yeah. I think it's more sort of the run, the strong end. That guy's sort of the run. He's on the strong side. He's the guy who kind of holds the point more than Ballard or Binns would have to. But Binns came in, and he had, people don't realize, he had as many sacks as Claiborne. He showed a knack. He should have had an interception. Or did he have an interception against Purdue? I can't remember.
He had one bounce off his hands. He didn't pick it off, but it went right off of him.
He really showed a knack. He did a lot of great things. And, can he do that? He's still, I want to say he's maybe 250-ish. Will that hold up? Well, I don't know, you guys might be too young, man. I'm sure you probably remember Howard Hodges a little bit. He was not a big guy either. Just had a knack.
He was, 230, soaking wet?
Yeah, he was 230, 240, and the guy got, he got paid to play football for 5 years. And I think he just lost a job in the CFL. I think the Binns is, I think what he does, you can make a strong case for starting. I think the guy, the candidate would be, I think Claiborne is more built for that. I think I think Ballard is a little more rangy. He's 6'4", and cover a little more ground. But can he hold it up as a strong end? Can he hold a point like Claiborne can? I don't think he can. So maybe that forces your hand. I don't know. I was surprised to hear that, though, from Coach Kaczynski, too. I was surprised to hear that they really haven't given that a lot of thought yet.
I think that has entirely to do with the fact that Jerry blew out his knee.
Yeah.
And I think that if, because, he won the next man in award for filling in for Claiborne. I think that they would have felt a lot better about moving Claiborne inside if they knew that there was a capable backup there. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't Ballard playing a completely different type of defensive end.
I think that's a good point.
Well, I think their typical philosophy of, the best four men up front, just like the best five up in the offensive line, it would seem that would have to involve Claiborne, Ballard, and Binns, given all the praise they keep throwing on Binns all offseason. And I'd assume the fourth would almost always be Klug. But if they're that okay with Daniels, I guess maybe that's the way they'll go with it and maybe work a rotation in during passing situations.
There's going to be a rotation. I'm not sure how it'll shake out yet, but there is going to be a rotation inside for sure. It depends on who that third or who that fourth is. There's obviously a third defensive end, so they've got bodies, and I kind of like that on this situation because they've been so on autopilot for the last 4 years on the inside and pretty much on the outside. I mean, it was mostly Madison and Oebema, and it was mostly Ballard and Claiborne last year. Yeah. I think the healthy way, I think the Wisconsin in 2007, a lot of that was running four defensive linemen out there for an entire game and then trying to deal with P.J. 280 or 260-pound P.J. Hill in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I think this is going to help. I think four guys, I think you get, if you can get three tackles, three ends, that's a good rotation, and that's more than they've had in the last few years.
Well, and I was at those 207 games, that Michigan State game and that Northwestern game where Norm finally discovered the rotation and Claiborne and Ballard were just wreaking havoc in the fourth quarters of those games, coming in off the bench and you know, relieving Madison and Webema. And I think that's kind of when Norm, you know, opened his eyes and said, wow, this might actually work.
and that's the fun part this year. Who will be those guys? You know,
yeah.
Hunter Mark, I think Steve Bigak is probably a year away.
How do you pronounce his name? I'm sorry to interrupt. I've never actually heard his name pronounced. Is it, say, Bigak?
Yeah, Bigak.
Okay.
He can't get here fast enough. That name is too good for the internet.
He's one of those guys. He came in at 220-ish, and he's up to 270, 278.
Yeah, he was a linebacker. And one of the things I noticed about him on his highlight reel is that he didn't run like a linebacker at all. Like, maybe it was just his way of keeping his hands at the ready or something, but he would always, like, swing them without really bending his elbows whenever he would run after somebody. It was the weirdest thing, but just looking at him, you're like, oh, yeah, he's moving inside.
And it's working out so far. I mean, I thought it would be a year away from even making the depth chart, and here he is fighting for time at number two. And Travis Mead, you guys think about him a little bit. Let's see here. He's been playing a different side of the ball. I believe, and this is Hawkeye trivia, he's the guy that was unseated by Belaga, is that right?
At left guard, yeah.
Yeah,
I think he was.
He was, for people who have read the blog since day one, he was an acrobatic lover in the Northern Illinois game. That was the first game we ever covered. That's been a long time. Yeah, but that was about it. Yeah, he was done. He went from a starter into October to part-time to water boy in 3 weeks. And that was because Belaga came in and just took over. Yeah.
That makes me a little nervous about the defensive line because what do you say? What do you guys say the same thing about Eubanks at this point?
Yeah, I don't know what to think about Eubanks anymore.
He may end up being the starting center.
Yeah, he very well could be.
He's been okay. He lost his job to a good player, but before that, he was a kind of a starter. You know, he was a guy they moved a lot. He was a guy they would seem to be looking to replace a lot. But that's just, you know, off the top of my head. I don't, you know, have anything to back that up, but. It seemed like he was the guy they were training. Okay, who else we got? He's the guy.
Yeah, it seems like he's one of the guys that, for whatever reason, just hasn't really improved since his freshman year. Like, remember, he was a freshman All-American by Rivals back in, what was it, 06?
Yeah.
And now, but, I mean, if you looked at him now compared to 06, I think the only difference is he's different hair style, maybe. but he doesn't look like you don't look at him and say like, oh, there's a senior, you know.
Well, he did he got rid of the Carlito do. There's no doubt about that. Mark, you've made the point all along, and it's a good one that I hadn't really thought of until you said it. That Iowa offensive lines do better when there's a dominant center in the middle. And you've been saying all along that you think Vandevelde was going to get that spot right up until he got injured.
Yeah, I really thought I thought they weren't messing around in spring. I don't know if you guys ever had a chance to talk to Julian or, you know, see any of those YouTube videos, interviews. He's a smart kid, and he's got a quick mind and very cerebral player. And I think he's more of a center build than he is a guard build. He's not very tall, and I would say he's maybe brushing up against 6'2", and he is 300 pounds. He's a powerful guy. I really think they weren't messing around there. I think that they were really going to look at that. And then I believe it was a biceps injury and surgery, and now he might miss a couple games. So when he comes back, they're going to put him. They're going to make him stick with what he knows, and it's going to be guard.
You think they're going to put him on the right and leave Richardson on the left if Richardson's looking good at that point?
Yeah, I think they're going to want to kind of preserve Richardson at least early, because he's going from a guy who Ferentz had him out of football. I mean, Ferentz had him all, but the tough thing. He said some of the toughest things I've ever heard him say. I mean, not bad, just kind of more like heartbreaking type things about a player than I've ever heard. And then all of a sudden, I talked to him on the beach down there in Tampa in December. Yeah, I'll be in spring. And I'm like, whoa,
why
in the spring? And here he is, and now and he's legit. But then he did go from a guy who knee realignment surgery, which was what Humble had, but Humble bounced back very well this year. Knee realignment surgery, it might be a little different for a guard or an offensive lineman than a linebacker. He's going to have people diving around that thing. It's going to have to be a train engine again. He's going to have to be able to blow people away. Can it get there? I don't know. But he's definitely a candidate in there. And they've got a lot of bodies to pour into these, maybe two spots, three spots until Vanderbilt gets back. They've got a lot of bodies there. You'd think they'd find two.
Yeah, it does seem like the scenario that's least likely to happen is that there's going to be a bad offensive line. Because it seems like they've got four or five guys on the inside, all of whom can reliably start. Even you remember when Seth Olsen went down and they put in Andy Campbell. He was great. Every single one of Sean Green's touchdowns against Wisconsin came behind him. You can debate whether the pitch to the outside went behind him, but, he had a great feel on that one as well. And so you got to think that, there's no way that, 2007 or anything gets, we have a reprisal of that, because no matter who they put out there, if it's Vanderbilt, if he's healthy, or, I don't know about Eubanks, but, all those guys with the completely offensive linemen sounding names, there's got to be enough.
Yeah.
Well,
there's not
going to
be a Travis
Eaton
scenario again.
I think Andy Kemple could be that guy. He could lock down one of these spots. The only thing I worry about him is he's out a long time with a shoulder injury he had against Illinois. So, Cody Hundermark syndrome, where, what could the guy do when his shoulder is blown out as far as upper body goes? And then, then you can throw in Dan Doring's name. This is the ball's in his court. Clearly, this is his last go around to do something out there. I like what you guys write about recruiting. Caring is creepy, not only because I'm a Shins fan, but I'm also it kind of sums up recruiting.
You're getting a blink every day now, by the way, just for saying that.
But Doring came in with, he was a five-star general, and this, he comes in and he is what he is. He's a guy who just didn't develop or is developing, and he showed a little time and has had very bad luck with injuries. And, you never know what kind of kink is going to go in the hose. And he's had injuries. He's been slow to develop that way. And maybe he rides in the sunset with an NFL-type draft pick type year, which would be a great ending. But, it goes by recruiting rankings, which are for entertainment purposes only.
Well, I think we can all agree on one thing. No matter who takes the guard spots, at least one of them is just holding the place for Casey McMillan. And in fact, I think both of them are holding them, because Casey will play both right and left guard before at the same time.
He is Montana.
Yeah. Big Montana.
He's a big guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't seen his name on the depth chart yet, which makes me think, and I think Oops and I have talked about this before, or written about before. Iowa, once in a while, will bring in an offensive lineman where they have to do a whole remake on the body. And this makes me wonder whether or not what they had to actually mold out of this guy.
Yeah.
The earliest career, only redshirt freshman, so he's got plenty of time.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I know you're already stuck at the office tonight, so we'll let you go. We appreciate the time, and we'll continue to read various things that have nothing to do with actual Iowa football.
Brewster, appreciate you guys, HS and Oaks, and anytime you guys need anything, just give me a call.
Great. Thanks.
Okay.
And that concludes the first edition of Black Heart Gold Podcast. I'd like to thank Mark Morehouse for joining us. We plan on doing these pretty much weekly throughout the season, and as time permits otherwise. Oops, Kyle and I look forward to discussing Iowa football, Saved by the Bell trivia, and World Wrestling Federation superstars with you weekly throughout the season. Thanks for listening. See you next week.